Good evening, everyone. I think I visited Santa Cruz Zen Center 2 years ago. So I'm really happy to be here again and to share Dogen Zen's teaching and practice together. When I came 2 years ago, at Sanshin Zen Community, we made a book of Dogen's waka poems entitled Zen of Four Seasons. That is a collection of 14 waka poems by Dogen. Since then, I have been working on translating Dogen's waka and making my comments on those wakas. Each waka a month for a newsletter of Sanshin Zen Community. So some of you may read some of the translation of my waka, not my waka, but my translation of Dogen's waka. It's almost done. Maybe I have 3 or 4 more wakas, but it will be done within this year. And one of my disciples, whose name was Joe Kay, who edited the book of Zen teaching of Homeless Kodo, she is going to edit my translation of, and my comment. And hopefully this will be published as a book. Since last year, when I have a chance to visit various Zen centers and give a talk, I started to talk on these poems, waka poems. And I found it's very helpful to talk one waka poem for a talk. We can study various parts of Dogen's teaching by reading the waka. If I, talk on Shobo Genzo, one hour or less than 1 hour doesn't work. But talking about a very short waka poem, make my talk more understandable and accessible, and Dogen's teaching become more accessible for many more people. So I continue to talk on Dogen's waka poems. And probably, as you know, waka is very traditional Japanese poetry. It probably originated before the so-called Japan as a nation was established. And the oldest collection of waka poem was made, I think, 8th century, so more than 1,000 years ago. And the collection made by the government, emperor's government, include 4,000 wakas. And since then, composing waka poem is a custom not only special people such as poets, but all well-educated Japanese people had to compose waka. And so it's not only for special talented people. Dogen was born in the year 1200, and his family was one of the highest class of the aristocrats. His father was called Nai Daijin, that is a very high rank minister, and his mother's father was like a prime minister. So he received best possible education, and it is his Dogen's biography said he studied Chinese poetry when he was 4 years old from his father. And his father was also very well-known waka poet. And, you know, his, at that time, the emperor asked his ministers to make another collection of waka poems. It has about 4,000 wakas. And Dogen's father was one of the kind of editorial board members. So he was one of the people who select the wakas to make that collection named Shin Kokin Wakashu. So I'm pretty sure Dogen studied how to compose waka poems since he was a child. But after he became a Buddhist monk, probably he gave it up. He didn't seek that writing waka poems, rather as a Buddhist monk or Zen masters. His main method of expressing his insight on Dharma using poetry is writing Chinese poems. He wrote, I think, about 500 Chinese poems, and those are included within Eihei Koroku, that is a collection of his record of his Dharma discourses, and also Chinese poetry. So waka was not so important method to teach for him, but I'm pretty sure he wrote some waka poems, probably when he was asked by people, or when he wrote letters, he may, you know, write his own waka poems to add a kind of a poetic sound. I'm pretty sure he wrote waka poems. But the first collection of Dogen's waka poems was publicized almost 200 years after Dogen's death. So we have no information about how those wakas are collected. So, you know, today's Dogen scholars, you know, the job of scholars are to be skeptical. They doubt everything. That was their job. So when they try to make sure those wakas are really written by Dogen, there's no evidence. So if we want to doubt, we can doubt, you know, whether this is really written by Dogen or not. But fortunately, I'm not a scholar. So I try to read these waka poems within his collection as composed by Dogen, and try to understand these waka poems in the context of Dogen's teaching I have been studying. And the waka I'd like to talk this evening has a title. And the title is, in Japanese, Furyumonji. Furyumonji, in my translation, is not depending on words and letters, not depending on language. And this is very well-known kind of a slogan in Zen tradition. Furyumonji is not depending on words and letters, and Kyoge Betsuzen is separate transmission outside teachings. And jikshi ninshin is directly point to the one's heart or mind. And by seeing the nature, we become Buddha. That is kensho jobutsu. These four phrases are almost like a catchphrase of Zen tradition. So I think if you have, you read some books on Zen, you know these phrases. So, not depending on words and letters is one of the very important part of Zen tradition. But problem for us Dogen's student is Dogen didn't like this. Dogen didn't like this expression, furyu monji, and also kyoge betsuden, separate transmission outside teachings. This means, these are almost the same thing, you know. Chinese Zen people thought, you know, Buddhist literatures, scriptures, such as sutras, shastras, or commentaries on the sutras, and Vinaya text, those are written scripture. And they thought those are the collection of Buddha's words and commentary on what Buddha taught and a collection of the precept. But then people thought you know, those collection of Buddha's words did not give us the same experience Buddha had when he sat under the Bodhi tree, when he was sitting by himself under the Bodhi tree. He has some experience, awakening experience. Even he didn't say anything about that experience. But after he had awakening, he had hesitation because the truth or reality called Dharma, in this case in English, we usually use a capital D Dharma, and this is only singular. But not Dogen. Shakyamuni had hesitation to teach because he thought this, what he discovered within his awakening, is too deep, profound, and subtle, and beyond any rational thinking. So even if he tried to share the same experience or the Dharma, they thought it's a waste of time and energy. So he thought it's easier for him to enjoy his, you know, liberation or nirvana or awakening and quietly die by himself. But fortunately, Indian god whose name was Brahman found that he had that hesitation, so he came down and asked Buddha to teach. Buddha rejected twice, but third time he said yes. So he stood up, but before going to teach, he stayed in that area for several weeks. I think he was thinking how to express, how to share what he discovered within his experience. And so he translated his experience into language. And after several weeks, he stood up from his sitting and walked to the deer park and started to teach five monks. And when he continued to teach, those five monks understood what Buddha said, and it said they also had the same experience. So at that time, the Vinaya text said, at that time there were six arahats. Six arahat means Buddha and five monks. So in the very beginning of Buddhism, there's no distinction between Buddha and his disciples. They are all called arahat. Arahat is a title of awakened person. After that, Buddha, you know, continued to teach for 40 years, and what he taught using language was memorized and later written down as a sutra, and that is handed down for many hundreds of years until today. And those written texts were introduced to China. And those texts are translated into Chinese language. And it is said Bodhidharma, the first ancestor of Zen, came to China from India in the 6th century. And until that time, Chinese Buddhism had already 500 years of history. And during that time, almost all important Buddhist scriptures were translated from Indian language to Chinese language. So Chinese Buddhists, if they wanted, they could study, you know, those scriptures. But some Chinese monks thought, you know, no matter how much they studied those sutras or commentaries, they couldn't experience the same thing that Shakyamuni awakened to. So there was a monk, Indian monk, whose name was Bodhidharma. And it is said Bodhidharma didn't bring any text. He came from India by himself and sat by himself in the cave of Shaolin Temple. So he didn't teach anything. He didn't translate anything. He was just sitting. And Chinese people who became the Bodhidharma student thought this person really transmitted that capital D Dharma instead of teaching. Usually Buddha's teaching is called also Dharma. But in this case, in English, we use a lowercase d Dharma, and this can be plural Dharmas, or that means teachings. So that is the origin of this expression, transmission, separate transmission via outside teachings. That means Bodhidharma didn't bring any text, any written teachings, but he bring the capital D Dharma. And at that time in China, capital D Dharma, the truth or reality Buddha awakened to, was called Shin. Shin is mind or heart, or one mind, or Buddha mind. And another name of that Shin, it was Buddha nature. So this Shin is beyond language. That is what is said, Bodhidharma transmitted this Shin or one mind, or Buddha mind, without using any written scriptures. That is the origin of this expression, special transmission or separate transmission outside the teaching. And what Bodhidharma transmitted was called mind or heart or Shin. So So that became very important phrase that make distinction between Zen and other schools of Buddhism. All of them are based on 13 sutras or commentaries, such as the Tendai school based on Lotus Sutra, or Kegon or Fa Yan school based on Kegon or Flower Ornament Sutras. But then people said they don't depend on any languages, any words and letters. They transmitted this mind-to-mind transmission. That is the meaning of this title, you know, not depending on words and letters. And yet the problem for us Dogen student is Dogen didn't like this idea. For example, in Shobo Genzo Bukkyo, Bukkyo means Buddha's teachings. In this case, this teaching is a lowercase d dharma. But in that fascicle of Shobo Genzo, Dogen very clearly criticized this idea of separate transmission outside the teaching, because it's dualistic. They separate Buddha's teaching between inside and outside. and the capital D Dharma and lowercase D Dharmas. But Dogen thought that is not correct. So, but, you know, from the Shakyamuni's time, it is true, the truth or reality, as called Dharma, is beyond thinking and beyond language, beyond any conceptual thinking. So Dogen also think there are two parts of Dharma. One is truth or reality itself, and another is a kind of explanation of what is truth or Dharma or reality, and how we can experience, reach that truth or reality through our practice. And basically what Dogen said, these two should be one. There shouldn't be a separation between Buddha's mind and Buddha's language, words. These two should be one. So, for Dogen, it's really important to use language, to have if we have some experience, we need to express it using language, or not using language. That means through our actions or through our practice. If we have the experience, we have to express it and share with it as a bodhisattvas. The bodhisattva practice is to not make ourselves into an enlightened person, but we live together with all beings and help all beings. So we need to reach nirvana with all beings, not before all beings. I want to, you know, attain enlightenment or reach nirvana is not a bodhisattva practice. So often we read or study Dogen's waka poems about this title, that is, not depending on words and letters. We must be careful what he is saying. So now I introduce Dogen's waka on this expression, furumonji, or not depending on words and letters. Let me first read in Japanese, then my English translation. Japanese original waka is as follows. イーステシそのことの葉のそほかなれば筆にも跡をとどめざりけり。イーステシそのことの葉のほかなれば筆にも跡をとどめざりけり。So this has only 31 syllables. In haiku has only 17 syllables.But, waka has 17 more syllables, but still very short. My English translation is because the Dharma, capital D Dharma, because the Dharma is outside the words I spoke, it does not leave any traces in my words written using a brush.Because the Dharma is outside the words I spoke, it does not leave any traces in my words written using a brush. So, he said, the Dharma, capital D Dharma, or truth or reality, and he is writing, he wrote a lot of writings.Shobo Genzo has 95 fascicles, and he wrote many other writings, and he gave Dharma discourses, and the collection of his Dharma discourse have more than 500. And he also composed, I think, about 500 Chinese poems. So he wrote a lot. And he was almost like a magician of language. You know, he is very skillful about writing. And yet he says that this truth or reality is outside his writing. So no matter how many times we read Shobo Genzo or other writing of Dogen and memorize everything and look up dictionary on all the words he used, actually that is what I have been doing for making translation. In order to translate, I have to understand the meaning of each word and each sentence and how these words are used in Buddhist scriptures or Zen literatures. That is what I have been working for more than 30 years. But, you know, this kind of study doesn't, how can I say, make me experience what Dogen is writing about. So what he's saying is that truth or reality or his own actual experience cannot be really 100% expressed using language. And yet he made so much effort to explain and express what he really want to point out using so many words and letters. So for him, these two are important. So from my personal experience, study Shobo Genzo and check out all the meanings of each word using dictionary, it doesn't help so much. But my understanding of Dogen mainly came from my practice. So without what he encouraged us to practice, no matter how many words we know and we memorize, we cannot really experience or have a direct understanding or knowledge about what he is written. So in this poem, he writes two sides. One is, he said he is using a brush to write. So he didn't negate writing using brush, means using languages. But we should understand the truth or reality or our real experience is beyond what he could write. So there are always two sides. So in order to really understand Dogen, we have to, of course, study by reading his writings. And yet we also have to practice what he asks us to practice. That is, our Zazen practice is really the center of our practice. And not only sitting practice, but for example, in Tenzo Kyokun, he gave instruction how to work in the kitchen as a practice, as a bodhisattva practice, what kind of attitude we need to when we work in the kitchen with vegetables or grains or fires and waters. And not only in the kitchen, but in the monastic practice, there are all the different aspects of day-to-day lives. And all monks have to take care of some part of day-to-day ordinary activities. And Dogen said all of them as important practice, same as sitting in the zendo and studying Dharma in the Dharma hall or library. So our practice is really including entire life. So sitting is not only practice. And reading sutras or Buddhist or Zen text is not only the practice. But because we don't really live in the monastery, so we cannot, really practice exactly what Dogen described. But I think all of us are living within certain community, within certain connection or relation with people, at home, with families, or at work, or in the larger community. So that part of our life can be also our practice. So how can we put both capital D Dharma as truth or reality, and how can we express experience and express that reality using words and letters, and share with other people is really important. And in the case of our Zazen practice, the two sides is there in our Zazen. Of course, Zazen is shut our mouth and sit facing the wall and letting go of thought. In my teacher's expression, is opening the hand of thought. So our Zazen is about beyond thinking. That means through our Zazen, this capital D Dharma manifests itself. But within this just sitting, somehow in our mind, we always have thinking, all different kind of thinking or emotions or even daydreaming are coming and going. And what we do within this sitting is don't interact with those things. Whenever we find we are interacting with those things coming and going. You know, when we sit in a quiet zendo, there's no object. Even though we sit facing the wall and we keep our eyes open, that we don't think, usually, we don't think that window, I mean wall, is the object, I think. But when we sit all those thoughts coming and going within our mind, become the object. And this person sitting is a kind of an observer. And when I don't like this thought, then I start to counter-argue about this idea. Or we have some memory about the past, and if that memory is not a good one, we have anger against, even within sitting, anger against that memory, or a person in that memory. Or when we think about, thought about the, about future, somehow, you know, we want to make the best scenario. And I hope, you know, this is like a story of our life. And the person sitting is intact with and control this thought or story in our mind. And we always want to make the story happy ending. When we do such a thing, that means when we interact with the thought coming and going, we need to understand that our mind is separate into two pieces, divided into two pieces. The person sitting is subject, and those thoughts coming and going is object, and we observe or interact. That is what thinking means in our zazen. But whenever we found or we aware that we do such interactions between this person sitting and those thoughts coming and going, we stop it and return to just sitting. Just sitting means, we sit, we breathe through our nose deeply, as if the air goes down to our abdomen. And we keep our eyes open. That means we need to make sure we are not sleeping. Sometimes we don't think I'm sleeping, but we are actually sleeping. And the thought within that sleeping is a dream. But still we think we are awakening. So whenever we find that we are sleeping, then we have to keep our eyes open and return to awakening. This upright posture and deep breathing and keep our eyes open, that means not sleep. And whenever we are aware, we are interacting with our thought coming and going, we stop and return just sitting. This is, and we repeat this almost moment by moment. So Dogen Zenji said we have to arouse bodhicitta, awakening mind, billions of times. And that is the reality of our practice of meditation. But within this very simple sitting, that is called shikantaza or just sitting, I think you are familiar with Dogen's Fukanza Zengi. That is a universal recommendation of Zazen. That is a manual of our Zazen practice written by Dogen. He said he explained how to sit about posture and breathing. But even though he said three major points important point of our zazen are posture, breathing, and mind. So he explained the posture and also breathing, but about the mind, only one thing he said is a kind of a quote from question and answer as a koan. And that probably you already know, if you are familiar with Fukanza Zengi, that is, think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking beyond thinking? So with this is his way, Dogen's way of pointing our mind in our zazen. Interesting thing is these two, thinking and not thinking, are together. That means thoughts are always coming and going, but by letting go, I don't think. Thoughts are there, but I don't think. This difference, very, you know, subtle difference is really important in our zazen practice. So our zazen is not a effort to stop, to eliminate any thinking or to kill our thinking, but we just let go. Let go means in order to let go of thought, we need thought. Otherwise, we cannot let go. So we don't fight against thought or killing the thought, but thought are coming and going, but we don't think. This, I think if you have some experience of the zazen, you can see the difference between thought are there and I think. Thought are there, but I don't think. What I'm doing is just sitting. Whenever we deviate from just sitting, we return to just sitting. So our practice of zazen is not thinking, but thoughts are always there. And an important point in our zazen practice is not important, but essential. That is, we vow not to take any actions based on the thought in our zazen. And literally, we cannot, because we cross our legs and hold our hand like this. We cannot do anything. We cannot make any karma, any actions. So at least during zazen, even though thoughts are coming and going, those thoughts are result of our karma. Our karma means our experience in the past that is stored in our deepest layer of our consciousness. And when we sit without external object, those thoughts come up and they become object of ourselves. And what we do in our zazen is to stop it, to stop interacting. So in this practice, both thinking and not thinking are there. So, and Dogen said, how can we think of not thinking? And finally he said, beyond thinking. Beyond thinking is his, Dogen's expression of this capital D Dharma. So thoughts are there, but we don't think. And within this very simple practice of just sitting, both thought and not thinking are both there. And these are happening within, beyond thinking. That is Dogen's expression, or Dogen point out this capital D Dharma as this very simple sitting practice. In this very short poem, he also, not only in our zazen, but in this short poem also, he expressed both. He was actually writing, but he said, the truth or reality he want to share is beyond what is writing. And yet this is expression of his experience or insight about what the reality is. So when we read this poem or any of Dogen's writings, we retranslate into our practice or into our own experience. That is, to do so, you know, written expression, such as poems or any sutras or any kind of teaching, is important. But just reading and thinking and memorizing doesn't work. We have to put the teaching into our practice. Then, you know, the reality is manifest itself within our practice. That is very important point of another important point of Dogen's teaching. That is practice and verification, or practice and realization are one. That means within our practice, this capital D Dharma manifests itself. The reality beyond our thinking that cannot be expressed using words and letters is actually manifesting itself through our practice. I think that is what he's saying in this very short Vaka poem. Well, it's already 7:30. Do we have some time for question and answer? Yeah. If you have any comment or question, please.
Do you think truth or do you feel truth?
Pardon me?
Do you think truth or do you feel truth?
I think both. I think and I feel and I practice. So truth cannot be the object of my thinking or my feeling. But practice manifests itself through my experience, including thinking and feeling and doing. So truth cannot be the object, something I can do or I can express or I can think or I can feel. Does this make sense? We are living within that truth or reality. That truth or reality cannot be the object of our thinking or feeling.
So in essence, there can be no truth.
Pardon me?
So in essence, there can be no truth.
Do you think so? If you think so, then that is truth. Right? I'm sorry, that is your expression of your experience. Okay, anything else? Please?
Well, my personal thing is that, you say that, never mind. I had a question, but then I kind of forgot it. Or it's not relevant to what you're teaching.
That's good. I'm glad. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Please.
I like what you say about language, both sides of it. Mm-hmm. I work in language, so I really appreciate
it. Oh, good.
And one of the things, the thought that comes to me is, I like language when someone gives a Dharma talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy. So when I leave the Zendo, the language of the dominant culture, the government, the news media, the Facebook, the corporate nonsense you hear, I think it makes me feel like language is not only unreliable, but unreliable, it's a complete lie. And I think it's difficult for people today to live with that lie, with so many lies around them all day, which I think makes practice very central.
I think we human beings abuse the language.
Yeah.
We don't use language as in a true way, as it should be. But we use language as a kind of a tool to deceive other people or to take advantage of other people or to get something we want from other people. That is really, I think, abuse of the language. So we really have kind of a love to the language, to words and letters, even though they themselves cannot be true, but we have to use in their true meanings, I think. Thank you. Okay. Anything else?
We could talk more at tea time.
Yes. Okay. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.